The Colorado Inn and KFKA present Rams Weekly. Brought to you by Marinda Simpson State Farm Insurance. Here's Brady Hull and Kevin Lytle.
Welcome in and surprise, it's not Brady Hull. I am Tanner Schwint, co-host of Good Morning NoCo. Joining me in the Aloe Fiber Studios, as always, is Kevin Lytle from the Colorado Inn. And nothing like starting a show off, Kevin, and your producer gives you two thumbs down. Love that, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the intro says, here's Brady Hull. And I was like, man, this does not sound like Brady. What's going on?
Yeah, I know.
Here?
I know you're very confused.
I'm looking myself across the table. I was like, what's different about Brady
today? Glasses, mustache.
Yeah, it might be the mustache.
It might be the mustache. Mike and Kilpatrick back behind that. Luckily for him, bulletproof glass. Welcome in to Rams Weekly, presented by Marinda Simpson State Farm Insurance. Kevin, what in the hell went wrong with CSU as they get thumped by Utah State 44-24.
Well, I said last week and wrote last week that weird stuff always happens when CSU and Utah State meet. You can't try and predict what's going to be, but something odd is going to happen. And somehow I was still blindsided by this one. CSU up 17-0, like 5.5 minutes into the game.
Straight rolling.
And I don't want to sit here and claim, like, I had, you know, the full, you know, script in front of me to use the NFL joke. But about halfway through the first quarter, I kind of started getting a bad feeling of, like, this might go haywire on CSU because they should have buried that game.
Yeah.
Should have been done by the end of the first quarter. The defense, which we'll get to more in detail,
right,
but in the first quarter was really, really, really good and gave the offense multiple opportunities. I think there are three, maybe even four different drives where CSU was up either 17 or 14 points and had a drive, including one that started at Utah State's 49. If you bury a couple of those, you're talking a 24-31 game. It's game over.
I mean,
all respect to Utah State. They've come back in every game this year. They're minus 78 in first quarters this year, but they're 3-3, so they're good at coming back. So all credit to them there. But if you get up by 30 or something, CSU's going to win that game.
Yeah,
They'll be able to control the clock, you know, do all the things. So the offense should have buried it, and then everything went wrong. The offense pretty much was bad throughout. Braden Feller, Nicolosi looked like a freshman for the first time this season, really, at least for a full game. The offense never got going. Torrey Horton got hurt. That obviously did not help. And the defense got gassed and continued to get gashed with big plays. Basically could never answer Utah State. And, you know, it was tied at halftime.
Right.
It felt ominous.
That's what I was thinking. Okay, you know, you didn't bury them. Brand new ball game. Second half, we'll come out and see what we saw in the first half, at least, or the first quarter from CSU. And it was just never there.
Yeah, it felt ominous. Utah State had 3rd and 11 on the first drive and hits a 79-yard touchdown pass, or 76, I guess
76.
It was.
76 is more than 11.
Yeah, and then, yeah, exactly. They got the first down. And then second drive had another big play for a touchdown. It felt like game over at that point. There were a couple instances where it's like, oh, CSU might be back in it because, again, weird stuff happens, but just never happened. A big play would be allowed at a key time or every time CSU was trying to make a comeback. So just a snowball of things. Offense letting down the defense laying down the offense, just a full snowball turn and an avalanche mess of a game, really, in the end. It's pretty wild to lose by 20 when you're up by 17.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I'm wondering, Kevin, in your mind, what was it that Utah State found on that CSU defense that flipped the script? Because they held them to 3 points in the first quarter, 17 in the first half, and then all hell just broke loose with that CSU defense. You know, I was talking with your colleague, Miles Blumhardt, on Good Morning NoCo Thursday morning this morning, if you're listening now, or Thursday morning, if you're listening Saturday morning. And I was talking with him, and he's like, you know, they've got good dudes, but it feels like they're just trying to play hero ball. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a fairly accurate assessment and sort of what the team has talked about. Like I say, we'll talk more about the defense. I have a list of crazy numbers I can reel off, but broadly, yeah, you have to have some good players if you have the sacks, the turnovers that they're getting. So it's not like they just have 11 terrible dudes out there. But Jay Norvell said after the game that, yeah, they forced some early turnovers, and guys kind of lost techniques, basically saying that of, you know, almost overly aggressive, trying to continue to make those big plays instead of just being sound in what you're doing and that soundness leading to big plays. So, yeah, there's some of that. The defense certainly got fatigued. Utah State had 50 plays in the first half, and they play at a chaotic pace. They fly, right. You know, they get to the ball fast. So 50 plays, no matter who it is a lot, and then playing at that tempo is really hard. Got gassed, never recovered, and, yeah, just kind of lost. That's what Jack Howell said after the game. He said, we kind of had individuals – or we were playing individualistic, not as a connected 11, which I think shows with the big plays. You know, I think one of the things you have – it's okay sometimes to give up a 12-yard pass play. It's, you know, it's going to happen in college football. But CSU, it's either they make a big play or they give up a monster play. There isn't much in between. If you look at scoring drives against CSU, again, I have more numbers, you know, depending on how deep we want to get this. But basically, they give up a ton of huge touchdown plays. You don't really have those drives where a team has to have 12 plays, 14 plays, 16 plays. It's pretty much 4, 5, 6 plays.
Well, and that's where the bend don't break mentality comes in. That's why you want that defense to do that, because eventually you got to bet that that offense is going to make a mistake, that's where you can make it pay for it. Not to necessarily defend the CSU defense, but I get it. I get why they're trying to play that hero ball, because you're sitting across there and go, our offense has done nothing for us,
especially in the second half. It's very natural to be like, we have to make a play to get back in there.
Right, when your quarterback's 26 for 57, 225 yards and 3 picks, and we know about the fumbles lost, that defense, it's going to naturally sink in and say, we need to be the ones to flip this game. And when you get that mentality, that's when you give up the big plays and you lose your technique.
Yeah, coaches love talking complimentary football. It's a cliche, but cliches exist because they're accurate. Yeah. And, yeah, it's again, that snowball effect, to use another cliche that I keep using, of the offense was struggling, and the offense keeps turning the ball over. You know, and this game, it was really bad. It's one thing if you have a couple turnovers mixed in with a bunch of touchdown drives, but when you're either punting or turning it over, that's really bad. It puts the defense in a really bad spot. So should the defense be much better than allowing these huge plays, you know, all over the place? Yes, absolutely. But is the offense responsible for some of that? Yes, absolutely.
No, I tend to agree. Did you feel, because I posted it out there on X at one point and said, are we on Clay Millen watch? Did that thought ever cross your mind, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think any time in a game where the offense and quarterback are struggling, that crosses your mind, because that's, you know, it's sort of like going to a reliever in baseball. It's sort of the one automatic natural move you can make to potentially change an offense. But I personally felt it. You don't want to do that for a few reasons. One, Braden Fowler Nicolosi is a youngster. He is very early in his career. Anyone that thought he was just going to throw for 350 and 5 touchdowns and not turn the ball over for the next 10 games was getting a little carried away.
Yeah, lying to themselves.
Getting a little carried away. He had his freshman moment. He still has not seen many things, many types of defense. So he had a few games of success. Jay Norvell's talked about multiple times this week. He told me yesterday, you know, we talked, you know, until we were blue in the face with Brain about the different defenses he was going to see against Utah State, including some zone stuff, because they'd been carving teams up with those crossing patterns in man coverage. Said teams aren't just going to keep running out in man when we're killing them in that.
Right.
And it's not that Brain didn't know or understand that, but he'd never seen it.
Right. Well, and it's a lot harder to realize what you're seeing in a game situation.
Exactly.
You can sit there and film all day and say, oh, well, I'll hit here, I'll hit here. But then when you see it in the game, you're going
to
struggle.
So he had to see it against the type of defense he was going to have to hit deep passes. He either missed those, either missing the throw or not making the throw. He had to learn all of that. While doing, learn by doing. That it's
trial
a thing when you're 4 years old. It's a thing, you know, when you're a high school kid. Like, through your life, you have to learn some things just by doing them rather than being told what to do. And that's where he is right now. And that's why I think you needed to keep him in there. Learn it that way. It sucks. And also, if you've made the move.
Yeah.
EFN is the guy for the season, at least the season right now. It's almost, I want to say insulting to Clay Millen, but you could almost lose him even more if it's like, hey, you're kind of our gadget guy to try and fix things, but then we'll go right back to BFN. And I don't see any reason to think, I mean, the reason they made the move is because Clay Milne couldn't efficiently move the ball downfield. So you're, you know, what are the odds that he's going to do that in a comeback situation? Jackson Brousseau, the other guy in the mix, I think that would not, that would be detrimental to a kid's development to, in that situation,
right,
put a true freshman in, say, well, the two, you know, the experienced or more experienced guy couldn't figure it out, so why don't you figure it out? Let's see what this kid's got. I think you just had to let BFN try and learn from that. We're going to see. I mean, we're going to learn a lot about him and this team and their mental makeup this week, and how they handle kind of bouncing back, if you will, from that game. So I get it. There was a lot, you know, social media conversation about that. I don't think it's a wild conversation to have. But I think you had to ride with BFN there and let him try and learn and figure it out. And, you know, Torrey Horton down, all those things. You know, these are things a quarterback has to learn to figure out.
Yeah, and BFN really had to try and figure it out, like you said, in the middle of the fire of Utah State. And it's tough to hear as a Rams fan because it's been some time since there's been success, but it feels like, you know, to really be take that step forward and learn how to win. I want to have that conversation with you coming up in the next segment about learning how to win. It feels like CSU still might be a year away, and I know that's not a thing that a lot of Rams fans want to hear, but I want to get your thoughts when we come back on the other side with that. You're listening to Rams Weekly. I'm Tanner Schwint in for Brady Hull, Kevin Lytle from the Coloradoan. This is presented by Miranda Simpson State Farm Insurance. We'll be right back. Welcome back in Rams Weekly. I'm Tanner Schwint in for Brady Hull, Kevin Lytle from the Coloradoan. Kevin, you know, we wrapped up that last segment kind of talking about do the Rams know how to win? And maybe, I know I'm not the only one who subscribes to this philosophy, but I don't know if a ton of people do. It takes time. Like, it's not just, hey, let's get a good group of guys out there, they're more talented, and then boom, great things are going to happen. Like, there's a mentality, there's a mindset to winning of, okay, it hasn't gone the way that we thought it was going to. What are we going to do at this point? What are we going to do at this point? And it feels like CSU doesn't have that winning mentality down just yet.
Yeah, I think it is part of a development. Jay Norvell talked a little bit about that this week, especially in regards to Boise State. You know, CSU's never beat Boise State. And he kind of said, as a team, you have to make up your mind that you are going to win. Now, obviously, it's not quite as simple as like, hey, guys, do you want to win this week? Yeah, let's do it. And you walk out. But the point being exactly that of almost manifesting, you know, self-belief and all that. And obviously they all say that, you know, if you were to ask them, hey, are you, you know, can you beat Boise State? Oh yeah, for sure. But there's a difference between saying that and truly in your, you know, gut believing that. And yeah, I think this team is figuring it out. You know, we talked with Coach about that this week of kind of the roller coaster. College football is a roller coaster. It's a wild sport.
The CSU ride has been way up and down.
Well, yeah, football is a pretty unpredictable sport, and then you're doing it with 18 to 22 year old kids, which are potentially the most unpredictable type of being in the world. Yeah. So it's up and down. Yeah, you have to learn. You have to learn how to ride, you know, the highs of, you know, like a comeback win over Middle Tennessee, the ups and downs of the CU week. And we've seen some good in that, and we've seen some bad, you know, such as last week. One thing I keep coming back to, look up and down this roster. Who has won in college?
No.
Very few guys. Torrey Horton was a part of a good Nevada team as a freshman, so you put him on there. Jacob Gardner play on them, on that team some, so you put him on there. They're, you know, a couple North Dakota State guys, so they did at the FCS level, right, at a very high win rate. Other than that,
not a lot of winning happening.
I mean, even some of your best players, you know, Chigi Anuzium came from Cal. That's not a program that wins. Ron Harge came from Oregon State, but he left kind of before they really turned the corner. You know, there just aren't many guys on this roster that have won a lot. And obviously, you're relying on a lot of young guys, too, so right, they haven't really had much chance. So I think there's something to be said for that. It's one of those circular, you know, chicken or egg arguments of, you know, do you need guys that have won, or do you have to learn how to win to know how to win? Like, how does it happen?
Right.
And it's a process. So, yeah, they have to figure it out. And again, that goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. I think we're going to learn a lot about this team's mental makeup this week. Doesn't say, you know, that's not to say if CSU loses to Boise, it means that they're a wreck mentally. But, you know, if they go out and just get trucked like they did last year in Boise, that would be a little alarming.
Yeah, it certainly would. And we're going to break down that game coming up here in just a bit. But let's go to one of the CSU programs that I do believe knows how to win, and that's the men's basketball side of things. I was out at the Green and Gold Guard Invitational golf tournament on Monday, which, by the way, such BS. So Brady's like, hey, Tanner, can you come help? I'm like, of course. I would be happy to do that. Not realizing what a beautiful course the Harmony Club is, and I'm not playing in it. That is cruel and unusual punishment by Brady Holder. My job was to make sure no one hit a hole in one. That was my one job.
You didn't read the fine print, the terms.
No, he lied to me, Kevin, but it was still a great day out there. Jack Payne, by the way, for the CC men's basketball team, incredible golfer.
Can he hit it?
He was set up on hole number nine at the Harmony Club.
Is this real, or is it just because you're mustache brothers?
No. I might have a better mustache than Jack Payne, and I haven't said that. I don't think about anybody in the world.
It's his is something.
His is little rough, and I told him as much. I called him,
I'm sure,
Mustache Brothers. But there was hole number nine out there, blind par three, so you can't see if the ball goes in. So my job was to make sure, because you want a pickup if it went in. And Jack throws one like 3 feet from the hole, backs it up. And I don't know how it missed the hole. It started on one side, backed up, and missed by... You know, he's a stick. But anyhow, that's not the point. That team seems like they've got a really good camaraderie around them. And Medved seems fired up, man. He seems like he's ready for this year to go.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they had down year last season, obviously. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. David Raya went to the draft, which obviously that in itself is great, but that leaves a pretty significant hole in the roster. And it happened so late that there was almost no way to really replace him through the portal. And then you just had injuries galore. Isaiah Stevens got hurt during camp and missed the first eight games. Josiah Strong was supposed to be a big part of it. He played a few games, but ended up having a medically redshirt because of illness. Jalen Lake missed time injured. Tavy Jackson missed time injured. Almost every guy in the rotation missed time due to injury, illness, something weird. Everything went wrong. But they reloaded. One, most importantly, Isaiah Stevens is back.
Right.
He did test the NBA waters, but he is back for his fifth year. You know, he may well go down as the best men's basketball player in program history. He certainly already has an argument for that even before this final season. And then, yeah, they kind of load up. Joel Scott, a D2 superstar from Colorado Springs, was playing at Black Hills State. Neat Clifford coming over from Boulder, a guy that has just huge potential and has never had the benefit of playing with a pass-first point guard like Isaiah Stevens. So, yeah, I think they're really excited about this group. It's deeper and more athletic and longer than I think any team that Medved's had here at CSU.
Well, and that size is certainly going to help. But you see when this team finally got things going in the right direction, and it led right into the Mountain West tournament, you know, where the way that they were making some noise throughout there. And getting that rhythm is going to be really important, especially early on for these guys, trying to get that core group healthy. And it's a relatively old team, correct, Kevin?
Super old in the best way. Like, that's the best compliment you can give a college basketball team these days.
Yeah,
y'all are old, because they have so many guys. Zay obviously has played for four seasons. He's played in NCAA tournament. Joel Scott played for four seasons at Black Hills State, went deep in the D2 playoff or tournament. Patrick Cartier has played tons of games. Josiah Strong, yeah, he missed last year, but he's played a ton of games in a good conference before coming to CSU. Jalen Lake's played a lot. Neat Clifford, Javante Johnson have played a ton of games. How do you spread these minutes out for all these guys? I do not know. Nico Medved does not know. I asked him about that yesterday. He said, well, we'll see. But having guys with that experience, you know, we're in a wave right now. There was the one and done phase of college basketball where the young teams won. That's over. Now it's old teams that win. And CSU is really old and experienced, and guys have seen a lot, and an interesting mix of guys that can play different styles and, you know, mesh together differently. And yeah, it seems like right now camaraderie is good. Again, we'll see what happens when someone's not playing, but Nico Medved's always been good at getting good personalities. You have the three Colorado Springs guys that have been friends since they were little. That certainly does not hurt. So it seems like a team built to, you know, make a little surge, and certainly a big bounce back here.
Yeah, and they need it, I think, too. And, you know, you talk about the Mountain West Conference for basketball on the heels of what San Diego State did in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, there's a big gap right now between San Diego State and where CSU was, but you expect that to close a little bit this year, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. San Diego State lost a lot. They retained a good bit, and obviously they're not hurting in the recruiting and transfer game either. Boise State, I think, should be really good. And then New Mexico, Nevada, CSU, I think, are that next tier. And, you know, I think this is should be at least a three-bid league. It's going to be a really competitive league.
We talk about the bids that Mountain West can get, it seems like, every single year when basketball season rolls up. And then we're like, oh, here comes the cannibalism. Yeah. Because it's just crazy stuff.
But the last couple of years, they keep sitting there in the 3-5 range. So I think these teams are good enough. And CSU load up on their non-conference schedule. So if they can win in November and December, they're going to be really well set up.
Yeah, Boston College, Colorado, yeah. Washington.
Potentially Creighton in that tournament.
In that tournament, yeah. Right. So I'm excited.
St. Mary's is a top 25 team coming to Moby.
Right. No, they've got a lot of big name schools coming to Moby. That Moby Madness should be rocking again.
Yeah, I mean, the St. Mary's and Colorado game should be wild.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So just wanted to do a little bit of a preview for basketball there. We'll preview the Boise State game coming up this Saturday. We'll do that next right here on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Welcome back into the Aloe Fiber Studios. I'm Tanner Schwint, filling in for Brady Hull here on Rams Weekly, presented by Miranda Simpson State Farm Insurance. You talk about one of the most diehard supporters of Colorado State. That is Miranda Simpson. If you're in the Fort Collins, Northern Colorado area and need some insurance, go and visit with our friend Miranda Simpson State Farm Insurance. Kevin Lytle from the Coloradoan. Going to be a fun game. Going to be a fun Saturday with a later kickoff, 7:45 kickoff. Between Boise State and Colorado State. And, you know, we talked a little bit about what CSU's at, sitting at 2-3 now. But you look at this Boise State team, and they don't seem to be the Boise State of old. But once you dive into the numbers a little bit, Kevin, still cause for concern for Rams fans.
Yeah, they're a funky team. A couple close losses to UCF and Memphis that if they pull those out, it's a totally different story. You know, defensively, we always think of Boise as a really good defense. They are not, numbers-wise. They give up a lot of yards. And even with that being skewed by the Washington loss, even in other games, they've given up a lot of yards. It seems like they're vulnerable there. They're doing a two-quarterback system, which generally I hate, but it, you know, they made it work last week. And two kind of different type of quarterbacks. They have a really good running back in Ashton Jeanty. So they can be dangerous. They're putting up points, but it... They're somewhat like CSU of, you know, the highs are pretty high, the lows have been pretty low. It's a weird mix of a team right now. But obviously, you know, we all know the history. CSU has played Boise State 12 times and never beat the Broncos. So, you know, that kind of looms over. It's one of those things, a coach inheritance, you know.
Yeah.
Jay Norvell has beat Boise, you know, multiple times. Nevada played them pretty well. But It's his burden to deal with now.
No, it is. Boise State, you dive into their losses outside of that Washington loss. Of course, Washington, a very good football team, but they lose to UCF 18-16. They lose to Memphis 35-32. Every game out, you know, outside of the Washington game and the North Dakota game, been one-score games either way. So it seems like they are a little bit vulnerable, but this is normally the time of the year where Boise State turns it on and figures it out. it out. They're 2-0 in conference play to start out.
Yeah, exactly. You look at them and say, oh, they might be vulnerable. It's kind of the same last year. They had a pretty poor non-conference. You're saying, oh, they're vulnerable. And then they, you know, they end up really turning on conference play. And yeah, like you said, 2-0 in Mountain West play so far. It seems like a team that at least has, you know, over the last couple of years, they know how to sort of be primed and ready for Mountain West games.
Yeah, they do. What do you think the plan of attack is for CSU coming into this? I know you're not going to change up your system a whole lot, but if the Rams are going to do what has not been done in program history and beat the Boise State Broncos, what has to go right for the Rams on Saturday night?
Yeah, first off, you obviously need a better game from Brayden Fowler, Nicolosi, and the offense. They've got to move the ball and score the ball at a more efficient rate. And, you know, they have some injury issues, most notably. We don't know for sure if Torrey Horton is playing or not because he got injured in that Utah State game, and it's sort of a day-to-day type situation. So if he's out, that really highlights those other receivers and the need to be good. But you just need that offense to have some efficiency, have some success. And then defensively, I think the big thing is make Boise State work for it. They're going to move the ball at times. They're going to score. You know, it's not like you expect CSU to hold them to 6 points over the game or anything. Make Boise State have a 13-play, 80-yard drive if they're going to score. Make them stay clean because Boise State has not been clean this year. Make them do that rather than give up a 70-yard touchdown, because if you can make teams work, it opens up the chance for those errors and those big plays that the defense we have seen can make. So you just need to be cleaner. CSU obviously has to protect the ball. The Rams have turned it over more than anyone in the nation. You just can't keep up that rate. Penalties, they need to clean up, you know, some of the timeliness of those. But really, you just need efficiency, more efficiency on both sides of the ball, because that's been the biggest problem.
Where was Dallin Holker at Saturday?
Yeah, so it's ironic or interesting, whatever you want to call it. After Utah Tech, Jay Norvell had a line, something about, you know, I think the only people that can keep Dallin under 100 yards receiving are you know, me, the coaching staff, for not getting him the ball enough. What happens? He basically doesn't see the ball, I think, until the second half. There were maybe a couple targets earlier, but yeah, minimal impact in that game. And then a bad fumble, which is his second red zone fumble. He has that huge brace on his left arm,
right,
which is certainly causing problems, but you have to protect the ball. So yeah, Dallin Holker needs to be involved, especially if Torrey Horton is out. But either way, he has to be. So I would be pretty surprised if early on you don't see a couple plays that are kind of designed to get the ball to Holker, because it helps calm the offense. You know, a few of those 5, 7, 8 yard gains, not a huge explosive play, but helps kind of slowly get things moving, get Braden some confidence. So, yeah, I think they'll look at that and be like, yeah, Dallin's got to have the ball.
Right. Well, and we talk about it all the time in basketball, right? Sometimes you just need to see the ball go through the net. For quarterbacks, you just got to get a couple of completions. And Dallin's really sure-handed, you know, at least catching the ball. I know you would talk about the fumbles a little bit. I think you're exactly right. I think they got to get the ball in his hands early.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, we've seen this kind of the only time the Broncos move the ball is on that scripted first drive. Mm-hmm. It seems I'll be interested to see what Norvell's kind of script to start the game is, if it's a few things like that to get some kind of easy receptions, try and get Braden, you know, back a little. I don't think Braden's lacking confidence, let's be real. I don't think he lost it, but to get him feeling good in that game, get some guys touches, and kind of get some of that positive energy back into the offense after a down week.
Quarterbacks are normally pretty good at shaking off one bad game. The last thing that can happen is to have Braden come out and struggle really, really badly in that first half. Because once it starts to sit there, he may not say, he's obviously not going to say it, but you know what that subconscious is going to be doing, start creeping in. And the pure fact of, you got some guys on this Rams team that can take the top off the defense. So you hit them underneath for a while, naturally the safeties are going to start to suck up. And I think that's the best way to set it up. Talk to me about the run game for CSU going into Boise State. It's been relatively non-existent so far.
Yeah, it's a multiple factor. I've had some people ask, well, why can't they run block? It's like, okay, most offensive linemen are good at one or the other. If you're a great pass blocker, you're probably not great in the run block. If you're a great run blocker, you're not great in the pass block. They're different skills in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
The O linemen that are really good at both, well, those are first and second round picks, and they're mostly playing in the SEC. You're an air raid offense. You're rebuilding this team, this offense. You gave up 9,000 sacks last year. What are you going to do? You're going to go get guys that can pass block. And they've done that. CSU's been really good in pass blocking. The quarterbacks are not getting hit. So, yeah, the run blocking is not great. I think he'll improve. But it, you know, it's secondary, if you will, to you know, what CSU needs. And first need is pass blocking. If you were to ask, you know, if Air Force all of a sudden decided to drop back 50 times a game and throw it, I bet those O linemen wouldn't look as good as they do in that triple option.
Right.
The other factor is CSU's running back room has been decimated. The injuries in that room are crazy. Avery Morrow still out. He won't play Saturday. He's been injured for a few weeks. Kobe Johnson did play last week after missing Utah Tech. He's not fully healthy. He did have a nice touchdown run, but he's not fully healthy. Van Shield, the walk-on, is playing. He got dinged up. I think he'll play, I think, but he is not fully healthy. Damian Henderson, true freshman, he got dinged up in the Utah Tech game, didn't play last week, maybe available this week. So that running back room is super beat up. So when you're already, you know, not great at it, and then all of a sudden you're down to like your 19th string, it's not going to be great. So, yeah, do you need to improve at that? For sure. But is it going to be easy? No, absolutely not. So certainly something to watch. The injury problems are really significant in that room. And frankly, across the roster, they're mounting. There are some potentially significant absences this week.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about Mo Kamara here in just a moment. But this is something you and I do disagree on, Kevin. I know that's a shocker to everybody out there. But I think putting the ball into your freshman quarterback's hands 57 times and making him have decisions 57 times a game is way too much. You've got to find a way to establish some sort of a run game, whether that's, you know, getting those wide receiver sweeps going or something along those lines. I don't think the Rams are going to have a ton of success throwing the ball 57 times. Now, I'm not a fool. I know a lot of that was because they were down. I just think that's too much, and you think it was, you know, kind of necessary at that
point. Yeah, I think it's part of the offense, and yeah, certainly the game situation. I think ideally they'd probably like to be in the 42-ish type throws.
You like how I did that right when we were going to a break? Didn't give you like, a lot of time to rebuttal?
Here's what I say. Here's you have time to retort. Oh, just kidding.
Yeah, just kidding. No. You can have time on when we come back on the other side. It's Rams Weekly presented by Miranda Simpson State Farm Insurance on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA. Welcome back as we wrap up Rams Weekly presented by Miranda Simpson State Farm Insurance. I'm Tanner Schwent, co-host of Good Morning NOCO, filling in for Brady Hull, Kevin Lytle from the Colorado. And Kevin, do you want to retort any more about what I said, or you just want to agree that I'm right?
No.
Okay, just no.
To both.
No to both. All right, Boise State, Colorado State, obviously going to be a fun game. Student section should be popping, hopefully.
Yeah, I think so. The students have been really good basically since COVID coming out. I think a late game for them is not a problem. Gives them time to build energy via drinks.
Yeah. Gatorade, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hydration. but no, I think it should be its homecoming. I think it'll still be a good crowd. Obviously, there's disappointment from last week, but I think this game will still draw a good crowd. The following crowds, you know, the next weeks kind of determine on the next couple games.
Yeah.
But this one should be good.
Going to be a nice, cool Saturday evening.
It'll be chilly, yeah.
Yeah, 40-something degrees going on there. We'll make our prediction on this game coming up in just a little bit. But let's save some time to talk about the game of the week in Mountain West football, and that's Air Force and Wyoming. I'm going to just go ahead and say it. I think that Wyoming gets this win against Air Force. I think Wyoming's, obviously, I know Wyoming's played a much tougher schedule so far.
No doubt.
It hasn't been pretty, but when does Wyoming ever play pretty football? They're going to grind it out. And like I said to you on Tuesday, this is going to be the fastest college football game maybe in the history of the world.
Except for Air Force against Army or Navy.
That's true. That is true. Okay. Second fastest of all time. And this the ball's not going to be in the air a whole lot. Nope. But I really like what Wyoming's done. I mean, what they've done so far this year has been really, really impressive.
Absolutely. I think they have a great argument as best team in the Mountain West right now. Because, yeah, Air Force has looked very impressive. But like you say, you look at a schedule and, you know, you can only play who you have on the schedule. But it's no one really impressive. So we're going to find out a lot about, you know, certainly Air Force in this game, but both teams in some ways. Wyoming's been really, really impressive. They're in the gauntlet of their schedule. They just hosted Fresno. Really impressive win up in Laramie last week on Fox. Great for the Mountain West to have that showcase and a good game to match it. Huge win for Wyoming.
The line on this
is crazy.
Air Force minus 10 and a half.
Because I will say, I guess Air Force has been blowing teams out, but again, they're bad teams.
Right.
That seems wild to me.
I agree.
Like you say, for a game that won't have a ton of possessions, two, you know, in my mind, really evenly matched teams, I really don't understand that spread at all. My feeling is I think Air Force has that thing clicking. I know their schedule hasn't been good, but I think they are really good. I think Air Force wins, but I wouldn't go with a cover. That's too much to me.
Yeah, see, and I'm at the point where, you know, obviously I would be all over Wyoming plus the 10.5, but I think Wyoming wins this thing outright down in Colorado Springs. So I'm excited for this game, 5 o'clock on Saturday, Air Force in Wyoming. The only thing that scares me a little bit is that Air Force defense is legit. I mean, they're only giving up 70 yards a game on the ground.
I mean, it is possible that game will be like 9-6.
that's some old school Smash Mouth football. Not going to be
look.
Of...
They both can really defend. They both, you know, Air Force obviously can score it when they're clicking, but even when they do, they usually do it slowly.
Yeah,
Wyoming, the offense has done enough, but you certainly wouldn't call an explosive offense. You know, this could be. I have no idea what the over under on points is, but.
42.5.
Yeah, under.
Under, yeah. I'm with
Even
you on
though
that.
That's not very high.
This is probably going to be the one game this entire year where when you talk about average yards passing, that Wyoming will be the clear favorite, averaging 151.7 yards a game.
Yeah, yeah. But, man, what a game. It's kind of a top 25 play-in game. I think whoever wins is not only ranked, but they're leading for the group of five, you know, champion, if you will, to make the New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah.
So this is a huge, huge game. It's not just Mountain West implications. This is big time bowl implications.
Yeah, it certainly is. So you like Wyoming to cover that 10.5.
But Air Force to win. Yeah.
But Air Force to win. I like Wyoming to win this thing on Saturday. We've got UNLV at Nevada on Saturday as well, Kevin.
Big rivalry game. Fremont Cannon on the line. I think it's factual that Nevada is just very bad. UNLV is much improved. UNLV wins and probably pretty easily, probably covers that.
9.5 is the spread
on
this one.
I mean, Nevada's scoring like 15 points a game.
That's not good.
It's not ideal, no.
No, it is less than ideal. Some
and they're
call
giving
it.
Up lots, so that's
yeah,
a double whammy.
It
not
is.
Ideal. Suboptimal, some
do you know
might
how
say.
Many, do you know how many yards a game that Nevada's given up? Have you seen that set?
Isn't it close to 500?
511.
Oh, it's over 500.
Yeah, 511 yards a game. Okay. And they play. Just,
I mean, they.
When Idaho
they
puts up 33
go,
on
they
you,
they could go winless. They have a couple potential wins. I think they host Hawaii. I think there's one other maybe that looked like a potential win, but winless is not out of the question.
No, they've got UNLV. Then they're on the road against San Diego State, home against New Mexico.
Oh yeah, that one.
Home against Hawaii in back to back weeks.
Yeah, so those two back to backs. If they don't get one there, especially because if you get to like 0-8, all of a sudden it's pretty easy for the mental side to spiral.
Is the fall of Nevada, is that directly tied to Jay Norvell leaving, or do you think Jay Norvell saw what he
both? I mean,
had
they and... the reason he left, he made it very clear, was the lack of investment resources. So that means that it's sort of a house of cards if they are succeeding. Obviously, a lot of that success came with him as far as players. And then, I mean, it's the transfer portal era. Yeah, he took, you know, a lot of players left with him, but you can replace them. Clearly, they have not
done
a good job of that. And I think the lack of investment in that program is now being, you know, highlighted significantly. So it's a combo of those things, I think.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate that insight. Fresno State taking on Utah State. This is the most surprising line I've seen so far.
So
Fresno
so
State's
funny.
Only favored by 4.5
points. So
this
points. Is funny because that's about what CSU was favored by the time the game kicked off in Logan last week after it kind of swung. So obviously the powers that be now believe in Utah State after severely not believing in Utah State. This, to me, Utah State is a flawed team, a fun and kind of entertaining and occasionally good but flawed team. Fresno State's pretty darn good. I think Fresno bounces back from the Wyoming game and wins and covers.
No, I'm right there with you, Kevin. Fresno State's averaging 408 yards a game. Utah State's averaging giving up 407 yards per game. So should be you know, a big night for the Fresno State offense in that one. Let's see where we go next. New Mexico is taking on San Jose State in the Who Cares game. San Jose State, New Mexico. You got any
San Jose State
this?
Wins. They're not as bad as their record.
It's and they're favored by 8.
Win and cover.
By 8?
Yeah.
You know more than me, so I'm going with you on that one, Kevin. And that will be the only time I will ever say that in my life. Hawaii, who does Hawaii? Hawaii and San Diego State, 9 o'clock kickoff there. That is a home game for Hawaii.
These are two teams that if CSU wants to get to a bowl, they need to beat both of them. They host San Diego, go to Hawaii. It'll be interesting. These are not great teams.
5.5 point spread.
These are not great teams. San Diego State wins and covers, I say unconvincingly.
Okay, I'll take the Rainbow Warriors then. Sure, I'll take the Rainbow Warriors plus the 5.5 points in that one. A couple of 2-4 teams going in. But like you said, big implications, especially in some of these games, for the teams that CSU is going to get later on. Because will they be playing for anything at that point? What will that look like? So CSU, Boise State, my friend. It hasn't happened ever before for Colorado State. Does it happen on Saturday?
So I kind of weirdly feel like the defense is going to play pretty decent in this game, but I'm really worried about CSU's turnovers, continued turning over the ball. I think it's going to be competitive. I don't think CSU wins.
Do they cover the 7.5?
Yeah. No.
No?
No. I think it'll be competitive. 37-28.
I like that. I don't know why, but I feel like Boise State's going to go with what they saw from Utah State. They're going to kind of copy that. You know Braden Feller-Nicolosi is going to be studying what he did wrong. I think it happens, Kevin.
Ooh,
I think it happens.
Tanner coming in hot.
I think CSU finally gets it done. But this has been Rams Weekly presented by Miranda Simpson State Farm Insurance. Kevin Lytle, thank you so much, my friend. We will catch up with you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. More coming up next on North Dakota's Voice, 103.1 to 1310 KFK.